Tonight, the man who calls himself the Prophet of Doom is finally behind bars.
It's all about violence. But I take a 2-pound can of clean peaches and bust you in your mother. Would that be enough violence for you, stinking white? This is an ordinary can of clean peaches, about 2-pound big kizzy, and say the mother, wah! Bust you in your mother. Would that, is that violent for you? Since you love violence so much, you whore.
Now the federal investigation begins. If his YouTube followers knew that he was planning something big, why didn't the police? And how prepared is your city for an attack like the one in New York? Do your police keep close watch on your buses and trains? You might be surprised at just how soft these targets are. And also ahead, they've arrived. Out-of-towners stepping off a tour bus in the nation's capital. But these are not tourists. They're Governor Greg Abbott's illegal migrants from the southern border. And they're just the first of many that he plans to dump on D.C.'s doorstep. But is Washington ready for the political baggage? Plus, she's back. Sarah Palin throws her hat in the ring for Congress. So is she more prepared for federal office now than she was back in 08? One of her first critics with a surprising answer. And then, on the left, how it started. On the right, how it's going. Julia Hart's remarkable journey from an Orthodox Jewish community to the sexy side of high society. But could it all come crashing down? It is all ahead on Banfield. Welcome to Banfield. He went from being hunted to being jailed in a little more than a day. Frank James, who opened fire, they say, on a subway full of people in Brooklyn, is now in federal custody. Police say James donned a gas mask and threw smoke bombs before opening fire and injuring almost 30 people on a subway train in Brooklyn yesterday. Police finally caught up with James earlier today after he himself called in a tip that led them to New York's East Village. A witness shot this video when the arrest happened.
I think they just caught the son of a from the subway right now. I just saw him walking behind me, and he was mumbling and saying about the FBI. And literally, I was telling my wife, I think that's him, walk faster. And she was like, no. I'm like, yeah, it's him. And there they are. They got him. Son of a him. Here he is. They just caught the son of a.
Our affiliate, WPIX, spoke with another man who spotted James and flagged down the police.
We wasn't here in the corner, and we wasn't work here, security cameras, and we see that guy. We was so confused. This guy of not, and I told, you know what, this is the guy. I told the amigo, this is the guy. I want to, he have bag and his. He was walking like this, and I told the people, yo, guys, keep far from him. Like, maybe he's going to do something. He have a small bag. He maybe have something inside gun, whatever. I don't know. I told him, guys, just be careful. Keep space, you know? And he was, like, so amazing. And I see the police here, car. I told the police, yo, this is the guy. People was thinking I'm, like, crazy. I don't speak, like, right. Like, I told him, this is the guy. Trust me, guys. And we catch him. Thank God.
James now faces one count of violating a federal statute that prohibits terrorist and other violent attacks against mass transportation systems. He makes his first appearance in court tomorrow, and he is facing life in prison if he is convicted. And while the manhunt may be over, there are a lot of other important questions that still need to be answered, especially since James left hours and hours of video evidence behind. Videos like this extended rant.
You know, I've noticed that my numbers have been going down, you know, on YouTube here recently, you know, maybe over the last couple of days, because, you know, they had been staying pretty steady. You know, I don't get that many views anyway, you know, and I don't care. And I don't know, they got me hemmed up, but it's okay. You know, if I have two people watch my videos, I'm cool with that. I'm not tripping off numbers or none of that. But it's interesting how they went, you know, how far down they've gone over our last couple of videos. And I think it has to do with what I'm talking about. And I really can't blame people for not wanting to hear what I'm talking about. I really cannot be, I'm not mad. I wouldn't want to hear it either. I wouldn't want to hear it either. But then they forget my name. They forget my name. Now, this is the Prophet Truth channel. This is the Prophet Truth channel. But I am the Prophet of Doom. That's my original name, the Prophet of Doom. That's what I've called myself since I've been on YouTube. So what do you want from me? Doomsday is actually about to be here. We're actually about to experience Doomsday. So of course, why would you want to watch and listen to the Prophet of Doom? Not mad at you one bit. But I'm going to talk about it because it has to be talked about. We need to know why we're going to die. We need to know why we're going to be destroyed.
I am joined now by Jason G. Weiss. He is a retired FBI supervisory special agent, and currently he's a cybersecurity attorney at the law firm of Fagery, Drinker, Biddle, and Reith. Okay, wow. So I literally just heard the words, we're about to experience doomsday. The viewers all heard those words too, Jason. So that sounds like a slam dunk unless someone like Mr. Frank James decides to mount an insanity defense. I can spot a million reasons why there's no hope in you know what for an insanity defense. But tell me where this investigation goes from here.
You know, this, first of all, Ashley, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. This is a really difficult case because we don't generally prosecute words in this country. And there are a lot of people who are, you know, I'm trying to be gentle here, mentally upset on the internet. I mean, the question has to become, obviously, why didn't somebody who see these videos report these videos to law enforcement? And if so, what could have been done to prevent this attack? So what happens next is really, like everything else we do, unfortunately, in law enforcement, it has to be a retrospection. We have to look back on what happened and see how we can try and change our tactics. But the biggest problem we have in law enforcement is we're far too reactive and not nearly proactive enough.
So look, I get it. I've covered a gazillion and one cases where mental illness is part of the story. I dare say if you were to go through any prison in America, you'd probably see about 80% of the inmates have some form of mental illness. But it is not an excuse, and you can be bat blank crazy and not be legally insane. And that man on the screen said, we're about to experience doomsday. And he also said in another video, I want to just kill a whole bunch of people, but I don't want to go to prison. That is consciousness of right and wrong.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. But the problem we have here in this country is the internet's like the Wild West. Who are the internet police? I mean, who should have caught these videos and tipped off law enforcement to stop this? Should it have been YouTube or Facebook? They run their algorithms, but they obviously didn't catch it. What about all the people watching the videos and nobody reports this? I mean, that is part of the problem is we just don't have a good way to track people on the internet between terrorism. When I was in the FBI after 9/11, people said, why didn't we stop 9/11? Because there were thousands upon thousands upon thousands of tips that we got that there would be terrorist attacks. How do you know which ones are real, which ones are not? And there's no doubt that this gentleman is mentally insane and should go to jail for the rest of his life for what he's done.
You said mentally insane. There's convicted. A difference. You know it well. You're an attorney. You know being really crazy is not the same as being legally insane. And I have seen extraordinarily sick people convicted, and they do not prevail when they mount an insanity defense, because you have to know the difference between right and wrong, or you have to not know the difference between right and wrong, as well as some other factors, in order to prevail. For this guy,
no, you're totally
he's
right.
All over the map saying, I don't want to get caught, I'm going to obscure, I'm going to hide my face, I'm going to run for it. All of these reasons just throw insanity, you know, farther than, you know, the eye can see. But I do have this question.
No, I agree.
I want to play a video where he details all of his movements, Jason. He talks about everything he's going to do leading up to the attack. He talks about specific places that he's visited. It's just like a treasure trove of something awful is going to happen, and here I am. Have a look at it. I'm going to ask you about it on the other side.
Sure. So I made it here, and now I got to try to make it to my next stop, which, again, is this town. I can't think of it. I'm not even going to try to get a name of it. Corridonia or something. She's right outside of Pittsburgh. I'm staying at a hotel out there for the night. And then I plan to not even go all the way to Philly. No, I'm not going to even try that. I'm going to get close to it. You know, drive close to it. Spend the night in the hotel. And then the next day, I'm going to start doing the unpacking my shit and all of that. You know, and then go to the other place I'm gonna be staying. So I'm staying at these same hotels while I'm traveling these two more nights.
Okay, Jason, I think the viewers who are watching would have the same question I do, and that is, if he's detailing his plan, are the people who watched that and sat back and did nothing in trouble? Do you have a duty to report?
That's a great question. A lot of that's going to be jurisdictional, depending on where. Because first of all, where are these people located? What are the accessory laws? I mean, that's a great question. They certainly have a moral duty to report. I think as a human being, I think that's something they should have reported. Whether they have a legal duty to report, I don't know if that's a question we can unpack in a short segment, because there's so many different factors that have to be weighed and balanced. But at the end of the day, the problem is, saying stuff like this is not in and of itself a crime. So let's assume that somebody does report.
But I'll tell you what, I think you're right about the moral part, but I think legally you don't have a duty to report. You don't. You should, but you don't, unless you're a public official. So I'd be curious to find who all his followers are, to find out who was watching, to find out who consumed that garbage and decided it was A-OK or, God forbid, spurred him on. Hello, Michelle Carter is the only thing I can say there, because if anybody else spurred that business on, I think they do have some trouble. But that's just me in the cheap seats. Jason Weiss, thank you.
No,
I appreciate your wisdom on this. Yeah, give me one last comment on it.
No, I appreciate it. Yeah, thank you for having me, Ashley. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm going to have you back, because I think this is an ongoing conversation when the feds start looking through the hours and hours of video. And I'll tell you, Jason, we didn't even have the time to download it all before, poof, the YouTube channel was gone. We got as much as we could, but you know that there are agents who right now are poring over all of it. So anybody out there watching right now, if you had a piece of this, you're going to be hearing from somebody in a dark suit sometime soon. Jason, thank you again.
Sure. Thank you, Ashley.
So, you know, it's the bone chilling to see the videos of all those people who were like trapped, right, in that subway car with a madman. You can't get out. You're between stations. And it really brings to mind a good question. So how safe are we when we get on these trains and when we get on those buses and when we decide to pay and take public transportation? Just how much of a handle do your local police have on your trains and your buses? News Nation senior national correspondent Brian Enten has been looking into that question all day. It's a really good question, because I couldn't wait until those doors opened when I was watching that video of someone in the car ahead of the catastrophe, waiting to see what was happening as the doors opened at the station. But there were many, many seconds before those people could run for their lives, Brian.
Yeah, it's scary for people because they are trapped on those cars when something like that's happening. And we all know this isn't like the airport. You don't go through a security check to get onto a bus, a subway, or a train. And it is very, very easy to bring a gun or a knife onto one of those trains or buses or subways. And we learned today that there is really an epidemic in violent crime on public transit.
While so many of us watched in shock and horror at what happened on the New York City subway yesterday, for transit workers, the shooting sadly comes as no surprise. Violence on buses and trains is on the rise, and it's happening from coast to coast. In Tampa, Florida, this man stabbed a bus driver to death. In Los Angeles, a city bus turned into a crime scene when a rider was stabbed over and over again in the upper torso. In Chicago, transit workers took to the streets in protest because violence on the L has gotten so bad. And in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, just last month, a shootout on a bus killed two people. The gunman fired 12 shots at passengers, then reloaded and kept shooting.
I just remember boom, 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 you know, and I just drove.
There's a bus going the wrong way on the eastbound lane. I almost ran into me and a lot of cars.
And he was basically speeding. I mean, it's speeding in the wrong way here on Broward Boulevard.
While the shooting was happening in the back of her bus, driver Gwendolyn Whitfield sped into oncoming traffic to get to a police station. Gwendolyn, you spent two decades driving buses.
Yes.
Have you seen the violence issue get worse?
Yes. Yes, definitely. I believe that people are more angry now. I don't know if it's because of the economy. I don't know why, but I have seen a lot of angry people.
The ATU, which is the largest transit union in the U.S., says violent crime on public transit is at an all-time high. But they don't have exact numbers because, unlike air travel, the union says the federal government does not track crime on public transit.
For years, they've just been sweeping it under the rug and hiding it. I mean, I saw an operator, one of my operators, get stabbed seven times, and they called it a simple assault. I mean, you stabbed me seven times. That's not attempted murder. I mean, and we had to go fight that.
It has gotten dangerous for passengers trying to get to work and school, and for drivers like Gwendolyn, who after 20 years as a bus driver, isn't sure she'll get back behind the wheel.
Will you be able to drive again?
I don't know. I pray I will, but I'm not sure.
And it is interesting to think about, Ashley, if you are on an airplane and you get into the smallest little confrontation, maybe a fight over overhead bin space, you will be taken off the plane in many instances and you can be charged with a federal crime. But there are all sorts of things that happen on the subway and on buses and on trains. People are spitting on the drivers. They're assaulting drivers. They're firing off weapons. And many of these people just get away with it.
So I was so interested, Brian, to hear you talk to Gwendolyn about, you know, her life experience. But is she angry that she's becoming more and more vulnerable and there doesn't seem to be any plan in place to make sure that these workers are safe, let alone the passengers are safe?
Yeah, she is angry. She's been driving the bus for 20 years, and she says all of the violent outbursts that she's seen and all the time she's felt in danger have all been within the last 5 years. And she says it has gotten especially bad in the last several months. She feels that there's just this anger in people. Again, you heard her mention it. She doesn't know if it's because of the economy or coming out of the pandemic, but she says that she can just feel it on the bus that something has changed.
Yeah, I think it's social media. People hate each other just for thinking differently, you know? Like, we're just on edge, and I think we're all tense because our inbox is as busy as our outbox, and there's no getting, you know, past it. So that's just me, by the way, espousing. But, okay, the metal detector question is interesting. Chris Maloney was working on this today, and he said, he's a producer on the show, he said, when I lived in New York, I used to take a train out to the airport. And I would pack onto the busiest train. Sometimes the doors would close because it was so full. And all those people are going to the airport to get on planes, right? And the planes aren't that packed, but no one's going through a metal detector to get on those packed trains. We're all traveling together, yet when you get on the plane, you know, the security is just second to none. You're not worried about someone knifing you or shooting you when you're fighting over overhead space. But on these trains, you might be. So after today, did you get a sense from anybody you spoke with that things are going to change, that we may be entering a new era in public transportation, that it might not just be so easy to walk onto a train like this with a gun and then just fire off and, you know, injure up to 30 people?
Well, I think it would be difficult to have metal detectors or, you know, any kind of security device at every single train station and subway stop. I mean, it's sort of impossible because there are so many. But one issue I did hear about over and over again today is there were more police in many cities patrolling the subways and public transit before there was this issue with people leaving the police workforce. So a lot of these transit systems do not have the kind of security they did, say, 5-6 years ago. And that is a major, major concern for the drivers.
What about this business you mentioned that the government isn't even tracking crime on public commuter services? I just assumed that they were. Why aren't they? And is that about to be drastically changed?
Yeah, that was kind of jaw-dropping. When we started on this story, I said to our producer, Lauren, hey, let's find the database that has all of the information about the crimes. I'm sure it's tracked by the federal government. And we quickly learned there is no database. The federal government is not tracking it. The good news is it appears that is soon going to change. It's part of the new infrastructure bill. They realized this was a problem. The unions have been making so much noise about it. That going forward, they are going to start a new system where they start tracking. But obviously, it's going to take quite some time for them to sort out exactly how they're going to do that.
Yeah, it was really disturbing, the stuff you found out, Brian. I think we all get lulled into a false sense of security because we're not getting on a plane and we assume that security's tight everywhere else, and it's not. There was a day we didn't go through metal detectors to go to school either, and now you do just about everywhere. So, Brian, thank you for collecting all the info and doing the job tonight. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Ashley.
Still ahead tonight, Texas taxpayers are footing the bill to bus illegal migrants from the southern border all the way to the nation's capital. Welcome! The governor thinks this is a one-way ticket to re-election. The White House says this is a stunt. But will it shake up Washington to the immigration crisis on the southern border? And she was shredded by critics as a vice presidential candidate back in 2008. And her political aspirations, they really seemed to fizzle back in Alaska. But a decade and a half later, Sarah Palin wants a seat in Congress. And she's now filed the paperwork needed to run. So what's changed since 2008? And is she up for the task? One of her toughest critics back then has a surprising answer. Next. Welcome back. Tonight, a busload of migrants from Central and South America are seeing a whole lot more of the United States than they probably expected when they crossed into Texas barely a week ago. In fact, they kind of got the royal tour, an all-expense-paid bus trip from the Texas border all the way to the nation's capital. They arrived in Washington, D.C. this morning in a display of political gamesmanship that critics call a PR stunt. But Texas Governor Greg Abbott says it is time that lawmakers in D.C. see what it's like when waves and waves of undocumented migrants land in your community, something the southern states have been absorbing for years. News Nation correspondent Evan Lambert is on the story. He joins me live now from D.C. So, Evan, what happened when the buses got there?
Well, Ashley, keep in mind, this is all voluntary. The Texas governor does not have the authority to move migrants anywhere that they don't want to go. But this bus, it did drop off a busload, about 30 or so people, right in front of an office building here in D.C. This is also right outside an office building that has many media offices, including here at News Nation. But this is also right in front of the main train station and between there and the Capitol.
Like 29 hours, more or less. I didn't count them, but about 29 hours.
After what passengers described as a nearly 30-hour journey, the first migrants from Texas arrived in Washington, D.C. Wednesday. It was part of a promise from Texas Governor Greg Abbott to send people voluntarily who recently crossed the southern border to the nation's capital in protest of the Biden administration's federal immigration policies.
There will be more that will be arriving, whether by bus or plane, so that Washington is going to have to respond and deal with the same challenges that we're dealing with.
The first bus bringing about 30 migrants, men, women, and children. Outside Union Station, Catholic Charities connected them with resources and additional travel to reunite them with family or friends. Manuel, who is from Venezuela, spoke to News Nation, saying he was trying to make his way to New York because he has friends there.
The people who brought us were really good. We don't have any complaints. I've been through 14 countries, and now that we've arrived where we wanted, from here on out, the plan is to work, God willing, and little by little, get out of the situation that we lived in our country, and bring my kids if I can. In the future, bring them because my family stayed in Venezuela.
Abbott announced the busing to protest the end of the controversial plan at the border to prevent the spread of COVID. It officially will end May 23rd and likely will result in an increase in illegal border crossings and asylum claims. But the White House has called Abbott's plan a publicity stunt.
These are all migrants who have been processed by CBP and are free to travel. So it's nice the state of Texas is helping them get to their final destination.
And Ashley, as you heard the White House press secretary say there, immigration advocates even suggesting that this is a good idea because it is helping migrants get to where they want to go.
Well, I mean, sure, they're being asked, would you like to go on these buses free to Washington, D.C.? They might never have chosen D.C. had they not been given that free ticket. So the question I have is, when they get there, is this causing a problem in D.C.? Is D.C. going to start feeling the pinch? Meaning, I heard Catholic Charities was part of your report there, Evan, but at some point, when 900 buses show up in a row, Catholic Charities can only do so much, and so can the social services system of the D.C. area. So I guess my question is, are they gearing up for the onslaught? Are they prepared for the numbers?
Well, I guess really we have to see if this becomes anything bigger than it was today. This was one bus with about 30 people. The Texas governor has said that another bus is on the way, alluded to the fact that there may also be planes, but we haven't seen the details of that. So it's really unclear if 900 of those migrants are going to show up from Texas here to D.C., but there are a lot of immigrant advocacy agencies and charities that have been helping them. And in this case, some of the group today, they had either family pick them up or they were able to, through Catholic Charities, get on a bus headed to Miami, which logistically doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
All the way down.
Came from Texas already. But that's where they wanted to go. It sounds like the fact that this was free obviously was an enticement because they could get somewhere.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see what happens to the D.C. area. Again, 900 buses isn't like the flood that the southern borders, they see all the time, the southern states. But it's, I think, as Abbott would say, it might be a start to start seeing what it's like when all of a sudden you have to start paying for all of the services for many of these first-time arrivals to start living and managing. Evan, thank you. Thank you for staying up late and being in D.C. for us. Appreciate it. Okay, I want to take you now to a seasoned voice in immigration law enforcement. Rodney Scott was head of the U.S. Border Patrol under President Trump, and then for 7 months also under President Biden. He is now with the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Rodney, you're perfect for this. So the question I have is, the critics say it's a stunt, but is it maybe more than a stunt? Because 900 busloads of newly arrived migrants does make a difference. It's visible. It requires some work and assistance, and it requires more than just Catholic Charities. So will this message actually resonate in D.C., or is it just a couple of headlines?
So time will tell, right? But it is more than a stunt. I think people need to understand a lot of these border towns that these people are coming from, they're small communities. They do not have large non-governmental organization groups to help them. Catholic Charities does exist, obviously, in South Texas, but they're overwhelmed and they're no longer taking these people. They were already shipping them all over the country. Um, I I think the governor is looking at any option he has to help his local communities by relieving this pressure and at the same time bringing attention to the fact that our borders are completely uncontrolled right now. And this is not an immigration crisis, by the way. This is a national security crisis because the smugglers are using these people as tools to create huge gaps in border security where they're bringing fentanyl, cocaine, heroin, you name it, terrorist criminals across the border right behind them. And the governor's doing everything he can to try to bring attention to that.
So, you know, it's often said that the people in D.C., the lawmakers, you know, affecting policy, they don't live the reality of what it's like to be a southern border state and then to be a city along the actual border itself. Do you think 900 buses is going to be enough to at least make people in D.C. feel something? Or are they not even going to notice a drop in the bucket?
You know, I don't know. I think the governor has to do something. I lived in D.C. for quite a while. Some of the people there, I questioned if any amount of fact or evidence would make them change their opinion. But at least it's keeping it front and center. Just the fact that you have the program on right now talking about this so America can see what's going on. And everybody needs to know, again, it's not a border issue. Nothing stays at the border, whether it be the fentanyl or whether it be the illegal aliens. They're trying to get away from the border as quickly as possible and get to a city near you. D.C. needs to wake up. This is a national security threat. I don't know if this will keep the attention on it for long or not, but at least it did for today.
Well, I was a little annoyed that the plan was to drop the first busload of these migrants in front of Fox News. There are other channels out there covering the story as well. Hello. So that's not necessary, and it actually detracts from, I think, the message that Governor Abbott was trying to send, which I think might be considered a legitimate one for a lot of people, but then you stunt it up by suggesting that one network's getting a freebie. It's stupid. That's just stupid. I think this is a viable conversation for everyone to have. That said, I want to play something that the governor said. He said it on Fox News a week ago, explaining his rationale. So here's a look at Governor Abbott.
Listen, these migrants, once they come across the border, it's not as if they want to stay down there in the Rio Grande Valley. As you have already reported previously, they're moving across the entire country. As they move across the entire country, what better place for them to go to than the steps of the United States Capitol? They get to see the wonderful Capitol, but also get closer to the people who are making these policies that are allowing people to come across the border illegally.
Now, there's a good message, and Greg Abbott should consider going on News Nation and not just tailoring his messages for Fox News viewers. Because, like I said, it's just stupid when you act in a partisan way like that, because some of these things are really a nonpartisan thing for a lot of viewers. There are a lot of people who don't watch Fox who would like to know about this story. Okay, I want to switch gears. I only have about a minute left. But part of this policy also is to start searching every single vehicle that comes across the border with a fine-tooth comb. And a lot of people are excited about that. And Greg Abbott is entrenched in doing that. But there's like a 14-hour backup, you know, at the border now. So forget the supply chain being our biggest problem. It might just be that Governor Abbott doesn't want you to get your special prize in the mail.
So I'm a nonpartisan. I work for Texas Public Policy, not the governor's office directly, so I try to stay within my wheelhouse. But it all is related. The smuggling that occurs at the ports of entry, it's the same as the smuggling that occurs in between. The same cartels control it all. I understand a ton of trucks that are unsafe have been taken off the roads, keeping Texans safe. There are implications, though. There's more than a 14-hour backlog right now with Border Patrol agents processing these migrants. There's thousands of miles of border that are unpatrolled right now because they can't get out of the stations. I think that's a huge threat as well.
Okay, you're coming back. Rodney Scott, thank you so much for doing this tonight. Appreciate it and look forward to our next visit.
Thank you. Have a great night. Appreciate being on.
You too. Stay safe out there. Okay, they said she wasn't ready and they said she was in over her head. But that was 14 years ago and Washington, D.C. is a very different place now. So is Sarah Palin ready for prime time in Congress? Cue the comments section. That's next. When Sarah Palin hit the scene in 2008, Washington was turned on its head and the establishment was shooketh. John McCain chose the Alaska governor as his running mate and her folksy manner and populist approach to her rallies stopped people in their tracks.
I love those hockey moms. You know, they say the difference between a hockey mom and a pit bull? Lipstick.
They loved it. Women came out in droves for Palin, while at the same time, the establishment and the press, well, they brought out the knives. It soon became apparent, while Palin was amazing in front of the camera, she simply did not have the broad scope of knowledge that her critics said she should have had to be a heartbeat away from the presidency. She stumbled when asked her opinion about the Bush Doctrine, and she struggled to come up with a list of newspapers that she read daily to inform her opinions. But most importantly, the McCain campaign dropped the ball on vetting her. One group thought the other had done it, and vice versa. And the fallout was swift. And one of the first and most important voices to decry John McCain's choice for VP was a man named George Will. Will has been a leading conservative voice in D.C. for half a century, and he's now joined News Nation as a contributor. So naturally, I couldn't wait to get his take on Palin's decision to run for the open congressional seat in Alaska. I sat down with George at a conference in Dallas yesterday, and I asked him if he thinks that Sarah Palin today is different than Sarah Palin in 08. And more importantly, is she now ready for prime time? And here's how he answered.
Is she ready to be 1/435th of the House of Representatives? Yeah, because that doesn't matter all that much. John McCain wanted to run with his good friend, Senator Lieberman. The trouble is Senator Lieberman was A, a Democrat, and B, pro-choice. And so if he had done that, he would have blown the convention up and would have lost 44 states. So John McCain, being stubborn as he was and combative as a good fighter pilot ought to be, said, well, I've got other friends. And so he picked Sarah Palin, just because people say, you can't do that, John. He said, you've told me that once already about Lieberman. I'm not going to listen to this anymore. I'm going to do what I want. So that's how we got Sarah Palin. And you can make a case that that opened the door to a certain style of politics.
You can make that case, yeah. And I don't think you have to question that case.
That's right. And I don't think it's been a net improvement for the country.
So Sarah Palin was perhaps the forebearer for candidates like Donald Trump and Jim Jordan, Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene, each seeming more strident in their views than the last. So did we underestimate the power of populism in the United States back when Palin hit the scene? She's currently leading in the Alaskan polls, but is she about to juice that congressional race? Stay tuned, because the special primary is June 11th, and the general election is August 16th. 48 candidates are vying for that seat that was left vacant when Don Young, the Republican from Alaska, suddenly died last month. Coming up next, from four kids and a husband in an Orthodox community to bondage lingerie, Mega Millions, and New York's high society, how Julia Hart checked out of her life, changed her name, and became a reality star. But what goes up often comes crashing down. And now Julia's fighting for her job, for her freedom, and for the end of her latest marriage. Who gets the $65 million apartment? I'm going to ask her next.
I'm not easy, but easy is boring. I was covered up my entire life. So to me, every low-cut top, every miniskirt is an emblem of freedom.
I want you guys to all outdo me. Challenge accepted.
She grew up in a tightly controlled Orthodox Jewish community, and she entered an arranged marriage at age 19. 2 decades and 4 children later, Julia Hart, born Julia Leibov, was a shadow of her former self and would eventually walk out of that marriage and that community. She started designing shoes and lingerie, and she married her billionaire boss, who anointed her head designer of a company called La Perla, maybe you've heard of it, and then made her CEO of a mega talent agency. A Netflix reality show called My Unorthodox Life soon followed, where cameras captured her every move as she spent millions on pricey clothes and hotel rooms, etc. Julia Hart has just dropped a new memoir called Brazen, where she spills the tea on a lot of what she's been through. But in February, her dream life came crashing down. She was fired from her CEO job. She was accused of embezzling company money, and she filed for divorce. So you'd think that would be stuff you wouldn't want to talk about. But Julia Hart is here with me live. And the book is called Brazen. Okay, so many questions. First of all that stuff happening just since February, what's going on? How are you and what's happening?
Well, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I don't know if you've read the whole book, but as you've seen, I've been fighting for my freedom for a long time. And every difficulty I've faced, I have managed to prevail, and I will prevail in this one as well.
So since, obviously, listen, when you write a book
to freedom.
Yeah. You know how this works. When you write a book and you come out and you're public, that opens the door for a lot of critics to come out and take their shots. And so they did. So I'm going to ask you a couple questions. Some of the people, they say they grew up with you. They said you invented this whole story about a repressed life in the Orthodox community and that it was not repressed at all. Why would they say that?
Well, you know, that's why, because of that backlash on the TV show, on the book, I've done something very different. If you go to brazenbooks.com, what you're going to find is a link called Sources. In there is a massive amount of information that proves every word that I'm saying. It's all the source material, all the things that I was taught, all the laws. And the woman who helped me with sourcing all of this, I just want to name her because she has done such a tremendous job. Her name is Penny Gold. She's a transgender woman who actually, amazingly, went to, her family belongs to that same yeshiva sect as my family does. Her family went to Brisk, which is where my brothers went to yeshiva. She actually remembers when she was a yeshiva bachar, a student in that yeshiva, that people would literally, she would walk down the street and spit at inappropriately dressed women. Now, you have to understand.
Yikes.
Yeah, it's so, of course.
Can I ask you, because I don't want to go too far down the road of someone else, but I do want to ask you about this divorce because it's getting so many big headlines. Julia, your husband is accusing you about lying about work, lying about your life story, embezzling company funds. Are you going to sue him for, like, if that's not true, are you going to sue him for defamation and go on the record under oath?
So luckily for me, I have two court cases that are soon to be decided. And, you know, I've told myself every day, when they go low, we go high. And I will wait for justice to speak for itself. To me, this is not something that I should be using the press to damage or attack. I love the company that I've been working for the last 2 years that I've brought from a company that was valued at $90 million to a company that was valued over $1.2 billion, where we have offers for over $500 million at a high $500 million valuation in 2 years through COVID. So I'm very proud of what I've done. And, you know, there's a great saying, a lie gets halfway around the world before truth has time to put its pants on.
Well, so everybody can read it. It's called Brazen, and I'm holding it up so everyone can... Yeah, I'm holding it up so everybody can see. It's called Brazen. I love the image with the tape over your mouth. Julia, nice to meet you. Thanks so much for doing this. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Julia Hart joining us live. Coming up next, forget the supply chain. Well, you might have to wait for your stuff from Mexico, too. That's next.